Well, this week on Dan Really Likes Wine, we're going Dutch, and there's a very good chance we won't talk much about wine and largely focus on football because that's an area of shared interest. We'll squeeze some wine in, though, because my guest is one of the leading authorities of wine in the Netherlands, and that's important for South Africa because it is such a big market for South African wine. It gives me an enormous amount of pleasure to welcome Lars Daniels to the show. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Dan.
And welcome back here in South Africa because you haven't quite got your citizenship yet, but you're close to it. You do love coming back here.
I do love coming back. I was here for the first time in 2012, I think, in Cape Wine, and I was spoiled right away. I got to get on a trip to Robertson and then to Sambona and fly back along the coast to Cape Town. So I was hooked. I was in love with the country right away.
So you are familiar with the charms of South Africa?
Yeah.
And you've been able to take them out to what's a really important audience for the South African world, because Per Sauvin, going back to 1988, is the definitive wine publication of the Netherlands.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember. So we've always had a historical connection, of course, to South Africa. And I think even before apartheid was officially gone, we already traded. So I was working in gastronomy in the early 90s. And I remember all these famous estates coming onto the market in the Netherlands very, very quickly. So Vergelegen and Buiten Verwachting and Mulderbos. And this was really high quality wine for a really moderate price. And that's what we like, of course, as a Dutch. And I was exposed to the quality right away, I think. And then after 2000, it only became better and better with the producers here getting more confidence and more maybe wine of origin, really specific wines.
You're one of the very few international guests we've have had, or I suspect ever will had, who's quite comfortable with names like Buiten Verwachting, because there is that shared cultural heritage.
Yeah.
How important is that link between the Afrikaans culture in South Africa and the Dutch culture in bringing wine to the Netherlands?
Well, it's first of all a very convenient thing for us because there's no time difference, so we're in the same time zone. And there's a lot of flights from Amsterdam. And it's very appealing a country to visit, of course, especially the West Cape and then the parks, of course, the game parks. I think the language Afrikaans is easy for us to follow if you listen carefully, you can understand it. And for me as a wine writer, there's an advantage. We only write in Dutch, but they can actually read what I write. So, which is great because any serious Bordeaux Chateau will not give a damn of what I write. But they do. These guys do. So that's a great thing, I think. Historically, the history connection is there. The trade connection has always been there. So, yeah.
What about the wine culture in the Netherlands itself? I've spent a lot of time in Amsterdam and various other parts of the country. It's never been difficult to find a glass of wine. But if you look at your regular Dutch person, your regular Dutch family, is a glass of wine over dinner, is a bottle of wine at a restaurant a regular feature of cultural life?
By now it is, yes. It changed. It started at the end of the 60s, maybe, And I remember my parents, for example, they were drinking wine after dinner with some chips and a really quite ridiculous way of enjoying wine. But they did, which is fine, of course. And then I think through the 90s, the gastronomy picked up, and then the wine food association became stronger. It became really normal to drink wine in restaurants, and it still is. And at home, like everywhere, it's going down a little bit, and it changed, of course, from red to white more and more. So people like fresh wines, which South Africa can provide easily, I think. But it's a tricky time at the moment. People are drinking a little bit less, but in gastronomy, it's totally normal.
And in terms of the food and wine scene, would most restaurants at the higher end have a real focus on a food and wine pairing, a food and wine offering, a big part, a big component of what they do?
Yeah, definitely. I think in the early 2000s, there was a real trend of food and wine pairings and a wine menu. So you would have like five different wines with a five-course menu. That is a little bit on the going down a little bit. People are ordering more bottles, really choosing a bottle that they like to drink, and it doesn't really matter if it fits perfectly with the dish, which for me is a good thing, because I think that's the way you should enjoy wine. You should just feel comfortable with a good glass and with a good bottle and go on from that. The Dutch don't have a wine culture themselves. We have about maybe 350, 400 hectares now of vineyards, but we've never had a real wine culture. So, but we were always a trading nation, of course, and every, you can find every wine of the world on the Dutch market, and especially South African wines, because of the relationship, we have all the good stuff. So people are spoiled. They can drink like a €4 Cape blend to the highest end wines, the best MCC, the best Swartland Old Vine, Shannons, the best Stellenbosch blends, yeah, whatever. Everything's there.
Having the option, though, doesn't always translate to taking up that option. So for your regular Dutch drinker, how prominent would South African wine be on the list of these are wines I'm looking out for?
I think very high up the list. If you only look at the supermarket listings, there's a lot of choice. I think Albert Heijn and other brands like Jumbo and Plus, they have easily 10 to 15 labels, maybe 20 sometimes. So that's a lot. And in different price categories, starting at €5 to 10, 12, 11, even 18, 20 euros. Yeah.
All right. So a lot of wine, a lot of availability, mm-hmm. which means a lot of wine for you to write about.
Yeah.
And when you are a wine writer, you've got a million different wineries trying to give you wine to talk about. You've got so much to offer. What's your philosophy when it comes to choosing what you write about, deciding how you write about it, and the gospel of wine that you spread?
Well, if we talk about tastings, we organize it with the Dutch importer. So they send in the samples, and we decide the themes. So, for example, South African reds, and then they send in a lot of bottles. These are big tastings, because they send in like 200-250 different samples. So we have to taste a lot. It takes a lot of space also in the back of the magazine. But this is the core business, of course. This is what we do. We don't charge anything for it. We just, taste as well as possible, as objectively as possible, and publish the tasting notes and the scores. When you talk about what we write about, we are totally free. We are totally independent. We don't have any editorials in the magazine or something. We had advertising, of course, but it's not linked to the editorial thing. So I can write about anything.
Well, what you do write about clearly works, because you are a magazine that is being published, and that sounds fairly obvious, except that in today's world it's not. And if I look at South Africa, our last great wine publication was Wine Magazine. It's now only available digitally, because the audience for a printed wine magazine simply isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
It seems to be that's not the case in the Netherlands.
No, we are doing pretty well, pretty stable in our subscribers. That's the largest part of our income, and it's very, very hard to keep them involved. But we're a kind of a niche magazine, of course. We only write about wine. And this is also an audience that still likes to read, to have something in hand on a Saturday and take their time to read it. Of course, we have an online presence. We have online subscriptions. We do all the social media. We do events, big tastings. We've done events with Woza in the past. We do events with the Union de Grand Cru de Bordeaux, with Champagne. But it's still the printed magazine that people like most, and we can keep it going. Yeah.
There is something about that tactile presence of a piece of print in your hand that I'm old school. I love that.
Yeah, me too. And I am also always very, very proud when it comes out and to actually touch it. Yeah, because we've seen all the PDFs, of course. We went through it 100 times already. But to have it really, to feel it, it's different.
Over the years, you've got to write about so much wine. You've got to tell so many great stories. The question I think we all hate in the wine industry is, what is your favorite wine ever? Because you've got 9 million choices. So I'll give you a slightly different version of that question. Mm-hmm. When you look back over what's been a long and illustrious career writing about wine, what are some of the wine stories that have meant the most to you to be able to tell?
Ooh, it's still a difficult one then. I think if I talk about South African wine, I think the first exposure was, like I said, like I think Mulderbos, Sauvignon Blanc or something, with the beautiful bottle with the stripe on it. And this was a time when such expressive Sauvignon Blanc was something that we were not familiar with. It was also, maybe New Zealand came later, of course, but that was a good moment. I think later on, the first time I drank Het Voetpad from Ibn Sadi.
Beautiful wine.
It was a bottle given to me by Rosa Kruger. That's the grande dame of South Africa viticulture. And this was very special. It was 2009, I think. And those kinds of bottles that remain with you always. But there have been so many. We try to taste a lot, of course, when we're here. We also try to go to wine bars and eat out, and we have so many choices. It's mainly also the atmosphere that is so great here. The way they go about, the way they interact with each other and with us. And it becomes so friendly that it's almost that I'm glad that they make good wine, because it's hard to be critical.
I think it is such a key component. And I love the fact that people like yourself do get to come out here and experience not just the wine at a big show, but get out into the vineyards, get out into the communities, because that gives you so much more of a story to tell than just here's a glass of wine.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why such a program is also nice, because the first days you have all kinds of events. You go out into the regions and you can pick. I've been here a lot of times, so I try to vary, of course, where I go. I was now in Bot River and Upper Blauwklippen, and those are pretty specific spots, of course, but really, really nice and totally different from each other. Bot River is much more maritime, and Upper Blauwklippen is this canyon almost, where it gets really hot. So that's fantastic to do. And then on Wednesday you come here to Cape Town. There's a different vibe, and you go to the fair. It's a really good combination, I think.
From a personal perspective, it's great fun to be able to travel to South Africa and hang out with cool people and drink lots of wine.
It is.
But as a wine writer, you sitting in your offices in the Netherlands, surrounded by 250 bottles of wine, and right, I've got a Sauvignon Blanc. It is the 9,000th bottle of Sauvignon Blanc I'm writing about this year. What new do I have to say? Versus, well, actually, now I've been out on the farm. I've felt the soil beneath my feet. I've met the winemaker. I've seen the blue skies over the Blauwklippen Valley. The dimension it offers you as a writer is so much richer.
It is, and it's one of the reasons that I don't like the word wine critic. I'm not a, it's a silly word, in fact, because I'm more of a, I like informing really well, and being enthusiastic about wine. So I don't write about wines I don't like, and I'm in the fortunate position that I can do so. Of course, if something is really wrong, you have to be honest and critical. But no, I prefer to write about the good wines and the fun things and the beautiful things in the world of wine. And it is exactly, you cannot write about wine without traveling. It's totally impossible. How can you judge a Sauvignon Blanc from Constantia, or a Swartland Old Van Shannon, or a Pinot Noir from Hemel & Aarde without having traveled, having been there? Not necessarily exactly in the vineyard, but you have to have a feel for where it comes from, for the origin, for the people that make it. It's hugely important.
sadly, not everybody is able to travel. Not everybody is as lucky as you and I to drink lots of great wine at other people's expense and call it a job. Yeah. But where people can travel, in a manner of speaking, is by capturing the essence of another country in a bottle, such as somebody in the Netherlands drinking a glass of South African wine. Is there, and this is a very broad generalization, but is there a style of wine, is there a particular area of South African wine that has found a really strong home in the Netherlands?
Yes, if you talk about fine wine, so the Netherlands has always been a country that is, how do you say it? That is keen about money. So the price point is important. But if you talk about the higher end, the fine wines, you see a slight shift, of course, from bigger, bolder reds to lighter reds. Grape varieties that do well here, Cinsault, and also the type of Grenache you can make here. That is really, really catching on, I think. And as for the whites, Sauvignon Blanc, with all due respect, but you can buy from anywhere, and it tends to be quite a technical wine. There are exceptions, of course. There are some really nice old vine vineyards also here, and there are some less technical wines, but it tends to be, it's the best researched variety in the world, so it tends to be a little bit technical. But there's so many rediscovering all the varieties that have been here for a long time, even Colomba and Semillon. So that makes it very varied, and with some real highlights. And if I have to name the highlight, I would say Chenin Blanc. It's just old fine, and not only from the inland, also from the coast. There are plenty of examples of world-class Chenins here.
It's not a surprise to hear that, but it's good to hear that nonetheless. And it's it gives a little bit of direction, particularly to people who are perhaps a little newer in their wine journey, or for whom wine is a little terrifying, because it can be. And people in the Netherlands will be looking to people like yourself, to Persevane, to go, right, I must be trying the South African Chenin. I must be trying these different wines. Do even you, though, sometimes get slightly overwhelmed, as you're right, we've got one single publication and we've got 40 different countries who've got wine available.
Yeah.
And how on earth do we decide which ones we're going to talk about?
Yeah, South Africa, as you said, is very important to the Dutch market. So there's a lot of South African wine in our country. I think a lot of people want to read about it. It's also a huge tourist destination for us. Lots of Dutch people coming here during your winter, even our summer. People are coming here and doing Western Cape, going to the parks and ending up in Mauritius and going back. And so it's a great destination. I think there's a lot of interest. And I think a country always has to sell itself by its best things. And then that's still sometimes like you're searching it, especially on the red side. I think the white side is quite clear. You can draw people in with very good Chenin, and they will explore, once they have tasted that, they will explore other things automatically, I think.
Several times made clear how fond you are of South Africa. I love to hear that. And you've made many, many great friends in South Africa over the course of your many visits, including a family out in the Wellington area whose wine we just happened to have here. Tell me about your encounter with the family Bosman and discovering their story and their home of wine.
Yeah, it was, I think, in 2017 that I was there in January. It was really, really nice weather. And I wanted to go a little bit outside of the beaten path. So outside of Stellenbosch, Franschhoek, Paarl. So when you go up to Wellington, it all already changes a little bit, in my opinion. It gets a little bit, it's less polished. It's still beautiful. And I also wanted to go, to be honest, to Bosman, because they have a nursery where they have plant material. And this is technically really interesting. And it's a big thing in South Africa. It's important to have good plant material. And when I got there, it's just a really, really nice family. I remember having lunch in the family home, holding hands, saying prayer. I'm not a religious guy, but I loved it. And the wines are really good, so and they're readily available also in the Netherlands.
They're a wonderful family and they're always so welcoming. And we were chatting a little bit about it earlier, their sense of community, not just in welcoming in an aristocrat of Dutch wine rising, but also what they've invested into the community and building brands that speak to the workers and support. It's a really comprehensive story. And it's one that I suspect, knowing quite a few Dutch people, would really strike a chord, because when you hear that it's not just great wine, but it's wine with a purpose and wine with a social mission, that is an added dimension.
Absolutely. I think, and it's part of what we call sustainability. There's a lot of focus on sustainability in the sense of climate change and how to work the vineyard, but social sustainability is so important. And they are offering that. Yeah.
Of course, no matter how many good stories you have to tell, you still need a decent glass of wine to back them up. Yeah. So let's see if that is what we've got. We've poured some of the... You're probably actually going to pronounce this better than I do, because I'm not Afrikaans and you are Dutch.
Yeah, in Dutch we would say twijfeling. So
pretty close. Twijfeling. So this is some Cinzo, and it's a category that I think we've seen a lot in the last year or two really come to the fore as a South African offering. That in the past, you go back to the late 70s, early 80s, Cinzo played a quiet role in a lot of red blends like the Chateau Libertas. But now Cinzo and Old Vine Cinzo on its own, single varietal, turning a lot of heads.
Yeah, definitely. It always makes me think of a quote by the most probably the most famous winemaker you have, Ibn Sadi, and he's great at quotes, as you probably know. And he said of Cinzo, Cinzo is like having a brother in jail. You love him, but you can't really talk about him, which is of course a fantastic quote. But it is also to the point, because there was a lot of, for a long time they didn't talk about Cinzo, and now a lot of producers are proud to talk about it again, because it can be like a Mediterranean Pinot Noir type of wine. It's less tannic. You don't need the new oak. You just have to let it be. It's quite big bearied variety. I don't know how it is here, but in Europe we make a lot of rosé from it. But these older vineyards are making delicious red wine.
So this gets thumbs up from Persewijn.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. Well, cheers to
that. Cheers.
And it is a delight. It's a delight, especially in South Africa. We're coming into a nice warm summer, and this is one of those wines you can pop into the fridge, chill a bit, and then I find it tends to disappear dangerously quickly.
Yeah. Even before the real braai starts, it's finished.
It is one of so many options that we have, and we're very, very fortunate indeed. Not quite so many options, as you mentioned just a little earlier, from the Netherlands itself, but I am fascinated to hear about the small vineyard you do have. What vines do you have? What wines are you producing?
Oh, now it's getting technical. because we traditionally don't have the best climate to grow grapes, of course. We're at like 51, 52 degrees north.
Tulip weather.
Yeah, and it's quite there's rain during the whole day, so it's not Mediterranean at all. It's really, really maritime. And the soils and the geography is not perfect, but so we tend to grow a lot of what is called in German peewees. These are fungus resistant grape varieties, new selections, and these are very, very intricate crosses between all kinds of things. They ripen a little bit earlier, and they are not so sensitive to all the fungus, the mildews, and etc. So that is a large part of it. But in the south, traditionally, there's also classical varieties, so Riesling, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Auxerrois, and those are pretty early ripening French cultivars, of course, mainly. And they do really well. There are some really nice slopes in the south, some really nice chalky soils, and that's a really good area. It's almost not Dutch, because if you look at, you've been to Amsterdam, you've probably taken when you arrive at Schiphol, you are below the sea level, and so the hills of Limburg are totally different from that.
Is this something I will find on a supermarket shelf in the Netherlands? Find in a restaurant?
No, there are very few. The labor costs and then the cost of the territory is of course high in the Netherlands, and the production costs is therefore these wines are all above 10 euros, and then it's hard to get into supermarkets. Some of them have got good deals, and they are in local supermarkets, and of course people buy it also because they like to buy local. It's a big thing also in the Netherlands. But usually it's more that they distribute directly themselves, so a web shop or, but also a lot of tourists. We like to cycle around our country, and on a Sunday, and you sit down on a terrace at a vineyard, and you drink a glass of wine, and you buy a couple of bottles, and you take them home.
One of my abiding memories of time in the Netherlands is driving a hired car in The Hague and accidentally straying a quarter of an inch into a bicycle path.
Yeah.
And the whole city came to a halt and glared at me for such a crime because bicycles do run what is a wonderful, wonderful country to visit. And I've loved the time I've spent there. I do want some advice before we let you go. When I get back to Amsterdam,
yeah,
which hopefully won't be too far in the distant future, my good friend Ruud Gullit, who you know as well, has persuaded me that golf in the Netherlands is something we need to do together.
Yeah.
But once we've played our round of golf, and hopefully I've taken his money, and we're off to dinner, suggest for me, if you will, somewhere for a meal in Amsterdam that you think reflects the food culture of Amsterdam, but that will also give me a wine list where I'll happily look at it and go, gee, there's some great selections. What should I choose?
Oh, it's tricky, of course, because I'm gonna annoy a lot of my friends that I don't mention, but there's basically a good gastronomy, affordable gastronomy with great wine lists now in Amsterdam. That wasn't the case 20 years ago. There have always been good restaurants, and then you go up to the Michelin star level, of course. And that is good, and it's fantastic that it's there, but it's very expensive and not for everyone. So good wine restaurants like Zoldering or Sink, those restaurants have got nice wine lists, proper food, and it's just a really nice atmosphere, nothing too chic. So I have a Café Parlotte. It's all kinds of restaurants that I also go to with the producers when they're over. So I've been there with Peter Allen Finlays, and I've been there with Donovan Rawl, and then all of them. So those are nice places.
I think both of them mentioned also they went to a couple of, I'm not sure if they're restaurants, but there were a number of places that had quite a lot of red lights around them. But I think that was a slightly different part of Amsterdam, to which I have not been. You mentioned some great names there. That sits in the context of what's been a rousing endorsement of South African wine in the Netherlands. So it's been really positive to hear all of this great sentiment. But I will ask you before you set off to enjoy what time is left here in South Africa for a word of advice, if there is one, to perhaps South African producers who aren't in the Netherlands or to those who are still finding their feet a little. Is there a secret to getting it right in the Netherlands? Is there more that can be done to improve upon what already seems to be quite a good situation for South African wine?
Yeah, good question. And it's not easy to answer because it's what you call a very mature market and a very full market. So every serious importer has got a couple of producers already in the portfolio, and even the specialists are very, very picky what adds to the portfolio, of course. So I think that the people that focus on certain varieties and certain origins and have a good quality there, those producers stand the most chance. And apart from that, of course, and we never talk about it, but we should, there is a totally different wine story also in South Africa and in the Netherlands. That is bulk wine. And we buy a lot of wine in bulk here. And these wines get into supermarkets. And so we drink a lot more South African wine than that is only bottled. So and that's a different market. There it's about price, and in the high end, of course, it's more and more about focus and origin and
There are a few more topics than sending South African bulk wine abroad that gets the industry more riled up. That is a debate for another time. I leave you with one final question around wine itself. I mentioned we might talk a bit of football. We haven't talked too much, but there is a World Cup on the horizon. I'm pretty convinced that the final of the next Football World Cup will be the Netherlands versus South Africa. I've got good money on this happening. If the Netherlands upsets the favourites, who would obviously be South Africa, and I have to buy you a bottle of wine as a result, what South African wine, if budget is no issue, vintage is no issue, producer is no issue, am I buying you to congratulate you on your upset victory over South Africa?
Well, I've mentioned one of my favorites, so I will take another one. I would probably want you to buy me Hoestein from David and Nadia.
I think we can make that happen. It's wonderful wine from a great Swartland producer. And look, if I'm giving it to you because South Africa's made a World Cup final, I'll take that as a victory in itself.
Yeah, you should.
Lars, it's been a joy chatting to you. I look forward to hopefully in the next few years we have a glass of wine in Amsterdam, as well as in South Africa. But until that happens, thanks for coming out. Thanks for being part of our South African wine story. And thanks for giving so many people in the Netherlands the chance to understand and appreciate the magic that we like to think we produce here in South Africa.
Thank you, Dan. It was a pleasure.
There we go. A wine publication that is still going strong in the Netherlands, Pabst De Veen. Well, it goes back to 1988. And amongst the many stories it tells, very happily, so many of them are South African. And it doesn't look like that is going to change. One of the great wine writers of Europe joining us on Dan Really Likes Wine this week, Lars Daniels.